Fetch ain't. We could use your help.
I am helping you, half-orc. A ruin made flesh is not easily slain. You say Tahanic was struck by the curse of the centaur's moon. What if he lives? What if he awakes possessed by that curse? The thought of ruin on a loon-crazed rampage made Oates queasy.
Aw, hells.
You must hurry, Bloodcrow said.
I can stall my brother should it be so, but only our sister can stop him.
The elf turned and rushed for the gate. Jackal called out to him in Elvish as he ran by, but Bloodcrow did not slow, did not respond. Oates beckoned Jackal and Warbler when their confused stares rested on him.
We need to go, Jack, he said when they came close. Now.
Jackal looked to Warbler.
Think I can't do this without you? The old thrice said. Go get her.
We're going to need light, Oates said. Warbler yelled for a lantern from the gatehouse. Sluggard brought it at a run, Thresher beside him. Jackal held out his hand, but Slug made no move to hand the lantern over.
We're going, Thresh said.
Jackal opened his mouth, but Oates spoke before he could respond.
You're not, and there ain't time to argue it.
Sluggard's chin lifted with defiance.
She's our chief to—
Oates snatched the lantern from his hand.
She's more to us!
Soon as the bellow left his chest, regret flooded in to replace it. Sluggard's eyes went bright with fury. Thresher looked ready to punch Oates. Jackal was careful not to look at him at all.
I need you both here, Warbler said, taking the shit Oates had flung in hand. Thresh, stick with Anvil. We need that Cyclops, so we need her. Make sure she don't push herself to death. Thricebloods can do that better than any. Slug, you're with me. Same orders.
Warbler's squinted stare shifted to Jackal and Oates.
Why are you still standing there?
Right, Jack said. They darted away together, breaking into a run. Oates shed the weight of his fear as he led Jackal through the empty streets. It was an old feeling, forgotten until its return. As children, Jacko had been smaller, weaker, barely quicker, yet whenever he was near, Oates gained an unthinking courage fed by his friend's limitless daring. Regaining that now brought strength to his limbs, speed to his steps. His mind was no longer burdened by worry, his heart no longer mired with doubt. There was only what had to be done, and the movement needed to bring fetching back to them. Reaching the torn-out sewer grate, they paused only long enough to put daggers between their teeth before clambering down through the hole. Beyond the culvert, a slope of masonry led to the sewer proper. Jackal went first with the light, sure and silent. The tunnel at the bottom was larger than any beneath El Arena. Oates barely had to crouch, and Jackal could stand fully upright. The sewer led away in both directions. Moonlight from the street drains above sliced through the gloom at irregular intervals. Oates took his dagger in hand. He signaled to Jack to go left 100 paces, indicating he would do the same to the right. Jackal nodded in agreement. They moved off. It wasn't long before Oates found the stonework of the sewer wall broken, a smaller passage leading down into a blackness that even half-orc eyes could not penetrate. He returned to the culvert and found Jackal waiting.
Anything?
No, Jackal said. You?
Another hole, Oates replied. Looks to have been dug out. Goes deeper.
Let's see it. They went back together. As they approached the cavity, Oates's heart jumped to his throat. A smear of light now resided deep within the smaller shaft.
That wasn't there before, he hissed.
Jackal pressed against one side of the opening. Oates took the other. They waited, barely breathing, snatching glances down the shaft. The light did not draw closer.
Trap or invitation, Jackal whispered.
Fuck them for either, Oates replied, standing away from the wall.
He sheathed his dagger, pulled his stockbow around, began to load. His wounded hand made him clumsy. He fumbled the first bolt, biting down on the pain and a curse. "You good?" Jackal asked. Oates didn't look up, but could feel his friend's eyes on what was left of his two fingers.
"Ask me that again, and I'll shove these mangled stumps so far up your ass, Bellico will have no choice but to regrow them," Oates replied.
Jackal kept his mouth shut. He didn't carry a thrum anymore. These days, he killed quicker when close.
"Jack," Oates said, placing the second bolt. "Barsius may be nose high to my cod end, but don't think that's all he is."
"I don't." Stooping, they entered the rough shaft, Jackal in the lead. Caution and the ever-steepening downgrade made their progress slow. Oates smelled the tallow candle long before it was revealed around a bend in the tunnel, its melted base stuck to a jutting rock. A second could be seen farther on, leading them deeper.
"An invitation to a trap," Jackal muttered.
They kept going. Branching passages appeared on either side. Most were black, perfect nests for ambush. Jackal pushed the lantern's light into all of them, illuminating nothing but more rough-hewn stone. Still, Oates trained his thrum down every one as he passed, expecting halfling killers to come bursting forth. But only the earth's quiet weight assailed them. The sixth candle rested a few steps within a spur tunnel, the first to tempt them away from the central shaft. Jackal did not hesitate nor hurry. His steps were measured in their pursuit of each guiding light. He didn't shrink from the inevitable danger, but neither did he court it. The candles lured them farther, deeper. After what seemed an age, the branching passages and the candles ceased, leaving them once again with a single narrow road. Oates's legs were afire from the hunched march upon chiseled rock. The tunnel grew smaller, constricting as they pushed through its throat. Oates didn't look back, fearing he'd find the passage defying all nature and sealing behind them. At last, the tunnel leveled off, ending in a blister of space. Over Jack's head, Oates could see nothing but a wall of cut, fitted stone. The tunnel had been sealed with masonry. A dead end. Oates let his breath out. It was all he could do not to scream. This had been a trap, but not one intended to kill. They'd been led on a chase with no quarry. Small wonder the candles had ceased. Barsius, or one of his boys, must have placed the last and doubled back. No doubt they'd all been snuffed out now, gathered up. Oates and Jackal would be hard-pressed to find their way out. Even if they did, what then? The halflings had been scuttling around down here for generations. The tunnels would be endless. Jackal squatted. The place was so cramped, it was only then that Oates saw an opening in the base of the barricading wall. Jackal crab-crawled aside, making just enough room for Oates to hunker down beside him. The light from the lantern reached into the opening, revealing a straight, level tunnel with no discernible end. It was roughly the width of a coffin. Oates looked up to find Jackal's face set in a grim mask carved into a question. Go back or go on? It wasn't a fucking choice. Oates stood, quickly shedding his stock bow and brigand. No chance I'm fitting through with them on, he said. Oates, get going. I'll be along. Jackal's mouth relaxed. Not quite a grin, but it was something. See you on the other side. He dropped to his belly and slithered into the hole, taking the light with him. Oates unbuckled his sword belt, trying to do whatever he could to reduce his girth. He didn't fancy being without his tulwar, so he removed the sheathed weapon from the belt and pushed it into the tunnel first. He considered tying it to his ankle to drag along behind, but if it came loose, there would be no retrieving it. Sucking in, he crawled forward. His shoulders almost stopped him before he began, but he forced them through, flesh scraped by the stone. He could just make out Jackal's light ahead, all but blocked by the shuffling shadow of his body. Oates had been wrong in his estimation. The channel stretching out before him was tighter than a coffin. and it would serve as one if he became stuck. He fought down a welling panic, began pulling himself along, pausing to shove the tulwar forward. His elbows were beneath him, pressed into his torso by the roof of the shaft. He quickly regretted bringing the sword. He had to nudge it forward with the fingers of his good hand, slowing down his already torturous progress. He couldn't crawl over it. There wasn't room. Oates committed to the labor, to the small, exhausting motions. Nudge. Inhale. Drag. Exhale. It was too tight for him to wriggle, to employ his hips and legs. All he had were his pinned and restricted arms. Nudge. Inhale. Drag. Exhale. Mind-shattering terror crouched in the spaces between each profitless movement, waiting for the moment he failed to struggle forward so it could pounce and trumpet a helpless, prolonged death with his crazed shrieking. The light was gone. Whether it had gone out or Jackal had simply moved too far ahead, Oates couldn't say, for he could not raise his head up enough to see. His muscles were screaming, cramping. To continue on was an agony, to stop was a horror. And then he heard it. "Nearly there!" Jackal's voice. But still there was no light. Nudge. Inhale. Drag. Exhale. After an eternity of compressed, interminable effort, Oates heard his sword dragged away. A moment later, Jackal's hand reached in for his and helped pull him free. Oates jumped to his feet, every sinew in his body demanding to move, to shake off the grip of the stone. He took in deep lungfuls of air. His breaths echoed. He couldn't see, but he could feel the coolness of the space around him. They'd emerged into a cavern. "Why are we in the dark?" Oates whispered. "Knocked the lantern over during the crawl," Jackal answered in a hush. "The candle went out." "Shit. Close your eyes." "I'm blind already, Jack." A flash replaced the darkness with a painful glare. Oates grunted, eyes forced shut against the burning white radiance. The dazzle subsided behind his eyelids, leaving dancing blobs behind. Opening his eyes, Oates found Jackal dumping powder from a small vial onto his dagger blade. The metal was awash in ephemeral blue flames. As the harshness of the light's source softened into a glow, Oates realized they weren't standing in a cavern, but a lofty corridor. A double row of fluted columns soared into shadow, marching away into the gloom. The white marble shone in the ghostly light. At their feet, an intricately tiled floor could be spied beneath the scattered debris of untold ages. Oates turned in place, following Jackal's stare to the wall housing their entry tunnel. Its entire broad surface rippled with embossed carvings. The stone bulged with the leg muscles of a colossal man, his stance wide. The sinuous swell of a great serpent's coil snared one thigh, wrapped about the man's bare torso. Grappling hands, huge and straining, fended off the constriction. But in that supple shaping of marble, Oates beheld futility. Both man and snake had been decapitated by time. The roof of the corridor partially collapsed at this end, the raw stone of the earth patiently intruding. Oates shivered, wondering how long this structure had endured the press of burial, hoping it would not choose this night to succumb. "We should move," Jackal said. "This light won't last long." Oates retrieved the fallen lantern, opened the shutter. "So kiss the wick with your magic flame there." "It's alchemy, not magic," Jackal said, "and it doesn't burn." He put his hand in the blue fire as a demonstration. "Got any more of them vials?" Oates asked with little hope. "No." Oates sighed, drew his tulwar. "Let's go then." He kept hold of the lantern on the chance they found honest fire. The corridor was as wide as the great hall of any castle, strewn with the cast-offs of its slow decay. One column had toppled and now lay broken in even segments taller than Oates. Jackal picked a path between a pair of the huge discs and proceeded on, his flame-shrouded dagger held high. The light barely reached the walls, but Oates could see more carvings cresting from the pools of deep shadow. The heads of beasts, the wings of great birds, the breasts of women. Together, they melded into the twisted forms of monsters. Jackal and Oates passed through a graven parade of serpent-haired demons, bulls that stood upright, horned men with cloven feet and erect cocks. Always they struggled against the same figure, a mighty thewed bearded man dressed in the pelt of a lion. One vast carving of the man battling centaurs drew Jackal closer. The dagger flames splashed light over the rearing horse flesh, the wild, leering faces. It was so lifelike, Oates was forced to avert his gaze. "I've been beneath Strava," Jackal hissed. "It's a hoard of grave goods stashed in a warren. But this is a temple from the Imperium. This looks like the god Burgos told us about. Lionclad."
"Herathos," Oates grunted in agreement, remembering the old river pirate story about the founder of Sparthus. "Why you bothered, Jack?"
Jackal turned away from the carving, his slack, puzzled expression stiffening as he shook his head. He led them on without another word, but he stayed close to the right wall. Oates could see him continue to study the carvings as they moved. Burgos had said Herathos went to Dargest and ended up fleeing with the orcs on his ass. He created the Deluge Sea to stop them, destroying the forest base and homeland of the elves in the doing. If the builders of this temple knew the same tale, Oates didn't see any evidence of it in their art, though Hells knew what adorned the opposite wall. Burgos had also said Lionclad was a lusty sort, and here the sculptors agreed, for violence wasn't the only act that embroiled the roving god. The carvings rendered orgies with as much detail as the battles. Herathos was entwined with piles of nubile women, and with men and monsters, too. Oates felt Jackal's wordless disquiet taking root in his chest. A man fucking centaurs, goat men, women-faced vultures with tits. It should have been a jest spoken to a fellow rider while passing a skin of wine. It would have been a jest, above ground and in the light. But down here, down in the dark, surrounded by these ancient carvings wrought with reverence by gifted hands, Oates found no mirth. He could not smile. Worse, neither did Jackal, a mongrel who lived to laugh in defiance of all repression. Spilled from the lips of an aging captain standing in the sun, these were stories to be heard and dismissed. But engraved in this cold yet vibrant chronicle, the deeds of Herathos gained form and menace. Walking through this temple that time had made a tomb, Oates gazed upon the undying work of the Lionclad's vanished worshippers and shivered, threatened by a devotion the earth had swallowed but could not digest. Was this temple the purpose of the halflings digging beneath Kalbarka, or merely a chance discovery in their search for more of Bellico's relics? Is this where they'd brought fetching? Or was it nothing more than a well-decorated pit for her pursuers to wander in vain? The answer came with the dying of Jackal's light, drowning the surrounding walls in darkness, but not vision entire. There was another light far ahead. The familiar, pulsing wash of fire gnawed at the right edge of the passage. They crept forward through the intervening pitch, feeling their way until the illumination was close enough to aid their approach. A great intersection stood before them, their passage crossing with a larger hall. Going to a crouch, Jackal snuck to the corner and peered around. Whatever he saw caused him to breathe a curse and rush into the lit hall. Oates was a heartbeat behind. They ran between enormous columns and plinths serving as perches for the statues of hideous creatures, but none of the stone monsters drew Oates' eyes away from the three made of flesh holding fetch suspended at the end of the hall. They were giants, heavy-boned, and brutishly formed, larger than Thune, though each possessed not one eye, but two. And two pairs of arms. One giant stood to either side of the chief, one upper hand grasping her arm, the lower hand her leg, holding her limbs splayed. The third massive creature stood behind Fetching, his lower hands encircling her waist, while the upper had hold of her head. She was twice her own height from the floor, motionless. Most of her face was covered by the giant's fingers, but Oates did not think she was conscious. Still, her monstrous captors looked capable of quashing any resistance. Hells, those eight savagely muscled arms could likely tear the chief apart. For now, there was no violence in their bodies, a striking contrast to the spasms of wrath playing across their faces as they bellowed in a tongue Oates did not understand. Their furious speech was spat down upon the figure standing between the great flaming bronze cauldrons at their feet, his small frame undaunted by their immensity. Zirko. Jackal called the high priest's name as he ran, and the halfling turned.
"Interference would not be wise," Zirko said, his voice carrying without effort over the abuses of the giants at his back.
Oates was prepared to cross the last dozen strides and cut the hero father down, but Jackal halted, his boots skidding on the crusted stones.
"Zirko," he said again, a low warning in his voice.
The priest's brow furrowed with regret.
"I had hoped it would not come to this, Jackal of the True Bastards. Release her." "I cannot."
The giants continued to spew curses, and Oates saw now that all three were blind, their eyes clouded. From the neck up, they appeared to be seized by a fit, their hairless heads jerking in chaotic patterns. Though their language was gibberish to Oates's ears, he began to hear their overlapping voices echo one another. Jackal snarled and darted forward again. The next instant, he cried out and stumbled as a cloud of inky smoke burst at his back, disgorging Barsius to slash the backs of his legs. Oates couldn't say where the hell he came from. Didn't matter. He bowled forward and sent his tulwar chopping down, but his blade hissed through another eruption of eldritch fume to smite the stone floor instead of the halfling warrior's skull.
"Please," Zirko said. "There need be no more blood this night."
As Oates cast about for sign of Barsius, Jackal sprang up once more. The cloud appeared in an eye blink just above him, Barsius streaking down at an angle from its murky core with the speed of a thrumbolt, cutting Jackal across the face with such force it spun the mongrel and sent him reeling back to the ground. Barsius's feet never touched the stones. He fell into another cloud, which vanished as quickly as it formed. Oates moved to Jackal's side and helped him rise. A gash ran down from his forehead, splitting one eye and laying his cheek open so deeply Oates could see his gritted teeth through the wound. Already, the flesh was beginning to close.
"Atukan and Huroga oft quarreled in life," Zirko said, his face pained. "I do not wish to see their feud revived. I ask again, please desist."
Barsius appeared at Zirko's left, the grubby killer next to the immaculate priest.
"Not while you have our chief," Jackal growled, his words wet with blood.
He tore away from Oates' support and charged again. Barsius vanished. Jackal swung his tulwar anyway. Oates reckoned he was trying to intercept the halfling's reappearance, but Barsius struck from the side, slicing Jackal's ribs. Jackal spun, sword whipping, but he cut only the eldritch smoke. He struck in every direction, his blade a striking serpent of steel. Hells, he was fast. It wasn't good enough. He battled nothing but air and the lingering laughter of his foe. The smoke birthed and absorbed Barsius time and again. He was there in an eye blink when before there was nothing, his leaf-bladed sword tossing Jackal's blood with every strike. Oates wanted to help, but it was fruitless. He could not anticipate when or where the halfling would appear, and Jackal's whirlwind sword made it perilous to get close. Jackal's boots moved in a sticky pool of his own blood. Whoever this Huroga fuck had been, he allowed Barsius to strike faster than Atukan could heal. Jackal fell to his knees, his flesh gaping from dozens of dribbling wounds.
"Enough!"
Oat shouted at Zirko.
Bossius, the priest said.
Jackal gave a gurgling grunt as the point of the bronze blade sprouted from his gut.
Behind him, Barsius grinned.
Pulling the sword free, he fled in that damned wink of smoke, returning to Zirko's side the next moment. The giant's furor reached a new height. For a moment, Oates thought they would lash out at the halflings, but they stayed where they were, continuing their firm holds upon the chief. It was then that he saw their feet were made of marble. The veined stone crept upward, hardening their flesh. It was now halfway to their knees.
My people have toiled for a century to keep Great Bellico's relics from the hands of the Black Womb, Zirko said. Only to have one of our own willingly hand the greatest of those relics over. Zhrika would never have done this were it not for the misguidance of your chief.
So this is your answer? Jackal said, voice hoarse with pain. I'd thought you above petty vengeance, hero father.
This is far from vengeance, Zirko said.
No, Oates demanded. You allowed the centaurs to butcher us, Waddler.
Zirko's chin dipped.
A waste of life. The oracles of this temple only awaken with the coming of the betrayer moon. Yet there are few others with the strength to restrain fetching now. I will not ask forgiveness for your fallen brothers. I know you will never grant it. But the blame lies with her. I warned against forcing my aid in this war.
Jackal spat blood upon the stones, his strength returning.
Aid! You've done nothing but send your spies and cozen us into a trap.
Was it nothing to warn you against the tenebrous ways of sorcerers when first you came to Strava in the company of the one you named Crafty? Was it nothing to bestow you Vargara Atukan, grant you the power to fight the Black Womb's pet, an adder at the Grey Bastard's trusting breast? Was it nothing to rid fetching of the orcish filth poisoning her, and provide food for her starving people? I have been a friend to the bastards, and was repaid with threats, my wayward follower delivered to wicked hands.
Zhrika wasn't your damn follower, Oates said. Not for a long while now. All we ever did was help with what she wanted, which was to stay well away from you.
She has sacrificed much, Zirko said. Her travails have caused her confusion. I could have helped her if she had but returned to Strava.
She's not confused, Jackal said, getting to his feet. Zhrika didn't trust your help. She had the voice of your master slave in her head. Bellico isn't pleased with you, Zirko. And Zhrika knows why. I reckon it's more than being made to serve you.
Jackal cast a sullen eye around. You've led us into a temple of Herathos. His big oracles there don't sound happy to be doing your bidding. How many gods hate you, priest? How many want you dead?
If only you knew the pains I have spared this world while earning such enmity. I don't care a fuck, Jackal said.
Give us fetching.
Zirko shook his head.
I tried to save her from this fate. I know something of wielding great power to protect a beloved people. The burdens of such guardianship are wearying. Yet its origins are found in desperation, even elation. The road behind is strewn with pain, doubt, cruelty, every step a defiance of the death that shadows the path. When such a road ends not in death, but with power, is there truly a choice? At last, a weapon. At last, a way. What battered, servile soul would not seize the chance to never again fear another living thing?
As the hero father spoke, the petrification of the lion-clad's oracles rose ever upward. The giant's chorus of vitriol never abated, even as the stone claimed their legs entire, proceeding on to their bellies.
Jack, Oates said. I see it.
I confess it was a temptation to which I succumbed long ago, Zirko went on. Yet it is tragic how swiftly the shards of that fractured fear cause harm to all those surrounding the wielder of such power, those who remain vulnerable, shielding them, fighting for them. It is a monstrous task.
Fetch is no monster, Jackal declared. But Oates heard another voice, the chief's, the memory of her words whispering in his head.
They need to fear us.
You no longer know what she is, Zirko said.
I know she can break stone, Jackal smiled. And your oracles are soon to be statues.
And so too will she be.
We need to be something they can't cage.
Oates went cold.
Hells.
Zirko had found a way. The priest's calm pronouncement provoked a fiery scream from Jackal. He bolted forward, Tulwar extended low at his side. The instant Barsius vanished, Jackal leapt to the side. The maw of smoke disgorged the halfling killer, but his striking blade hissed through the air. Jackal spun, sending a reaping cut almost too fast to see. So fast, Barsius was forced to interpose his own sword to keep his head. Metal rang through the lofty temple, but the halfling vanished again before Jackal could strike a second time. Oates rushed Zirko. If he could reach him... Bellico's high priest stood motionless, the giants above him now stoned to the chest, the marble beginning to sheathe their lower arms. Oates was three strides away when the unearthly smoke burst between him and Zirko. He slashed with everything he had and felt the familiar impact of a blade biting meat, breaking bone. The fumes broke to reveal Jackal, cleaved from the yolk bone to the belly. Oates had killed enough in his life to know he'd cut straight through the heart. Jackal's eyes went wide, wide with confusion, wide as Oates' own horror-stricken stare, which met them.
Jack, he managed, releasing his tulwar to catch his falling brother.
Jacko! The answer was nothing but a squelching rattle that was somehow still cruelly recognizable as Jackal's voice. He went limp, the weight bearing them both to the ground.
Don't, Jackal! Don't!
Oates ripped the sword free from the ruin he'd made of Jackal's torso and pressed the yawning gristle together. The blood soaked his hands, causing them to slip and fumble.
Heal! Arukan, you fucker! Heal him! Jack!
Jackal's eyes remained open, but they saw nothing. The only twitches in his body were those caused by Oates's fevered attempts to hold him together. Oates looked up at Zirko.
Do something, damn you!
The hero father gazed at Jackal with distant disappointment for a moment, before looking to Barsius and speaking a few words in the tongue of the Unyar. He reached and placed a hand on the warrior's shoulder, and the smoke enfolded the high priest, spiriting him away, but Barsius remained. The giants had grown silent. Whether it was because Zirko was gone or because their throats were now marble, Oates could not say. The lower arms were stone past the elbow. Soon it would reach their hands, and, Oates knew with grim certainty, would spread to fetching. She had not awakened. At least she had been spared the sight of what Oates had done, what Barsius had made him do.
I wish I could kill you, he told the halfling.
Please do not try, Barsius replied.
The patterns of domed scars upon his face danced in the light from the cauldrons.
It would pain me to slay you, Oates, but I will if you attempt to stand in the way of what I must do.
What more could you do?
Oates growled, feeling his throat constrict and Jackal's blood cool beneath his hands.
The arm of Atukan must return to Strava.
Oates found a seed of hope.
Will Zirko help him?
The arm of Atukan, Barsius repeated. Not its bearer.
The halfling's sword wagged slightly in his hand as he tested the weight. Oates jumped to his feet, lifting Jackal. He backed away.
You ain't doing that.
You cannot prevent it, Barsius said.
He did not move.
He did not need to. Oates kept moving anyway.
It was to be my next task, Barsius told him. You saved me the effort of hunting him down. It is impressive you were able to find this place, I admit.
You led us here with candles, you stunted fuck. Oates nearly said it, but something killed the words. It was the column to his left, the fluted cylinder gouged by time. No, it wasn't the column, but the eyes that opened upon its pitted surface of pale stone and looked at him. There was no mistaking those black, unfeeling orbs. Oates halted and loosed a dispirited breath that was far from mummery.
Do it then, he said,
stepping closer to the column to lay Jackal down at its base. He backed away. The smoke took Barsius. No sooner had it disappeared than it arrived over Jackal's prone form to deliver the halfling, his back to the column. No scorpion had ever struck with the speed Hoodwink unleashed to stab Barsius. He detached from the column, flesh retaining the appearance of mottled stone, and punched a dagger down into the side of the halfling's neck 4 times in the span of a heartbeat. Barsius lurched, dropping his sword, to paw at his fountaining neck. The smoke tried to appear, but it roiled weakly, half-formed and guttering. The halfling pitched over, his wild gaze finding Hood standing over him with a dripping blade. The mongrel's pallid, scarred flesh reclaimed his body from its enchanted mask of stone. Barsius forced out words throttled with blood and disbelief.
Va, Aris, Karatan!
Oates sprang and cut the halfling's head off, his tulwar sparking as it met the stones beneath the neck.
The chief,
Hoodwink said, and ran for the oracles, springing to begin climbing the giant on the left, which was more statue now than flesh. He hauled himself up a leg and clambered to the lower arm. The hand holding the chief's leg was stone to the wrist. Holding onto the upper arm, Hood drew his tulwar and leaned to chop at the diminishing flesh. Oates left him to it and went to the other side. He wasn't as swift as Hood. By the time he made the climb, it would be too late. He cast about, his eyes falling on the great bronze cauldron. Ignoring the flames, Oates seized it by the lip, gritting his teeth against the pain of the burns and his crushed fingers. He spun as he lifted, revolving fully twice to gain momentum. The cauldron lifted from the stones, spilling fiery pitch. Oates flung the heavy vessel, aiming for the upper arm of the giant. The cauldron smote the marble, clanging as it rebounded. Oates dove away as the vessel and its burning contents returned to the floor. The arm was still intact, smirched with pitch. But Oates thought he heard a crack. He hurried to retrieve the cauldron. Hood had severed the lower hand of the leftward giant and was now hacking at the top. Fetch's right leg hung free, a massive hand dripping blood dangling weakly from her boot. The oracles could no longer scream from their gaping, graven mouths, but their blind eyes blazed with a terrible agony. Oates flung the cauldron again, knowing he wouldn't get a third chance. The curved edge of the bronze bowl snapped the marble above the elbow, sending the upper arm falling into the lower and breaking it in turn. Slipping from the chief, the massive stone limb struck the temple floor and shattered, forcing Oates to stumble away from the flying debris. Hood had cut away the upper hand on his side, but there remained the giant behind fetching. Those to the sides had held her arms and legs one-handed, but this one had her head and body ensconced in all 4 fists. The fingers were stone to the second knuckle. Hoodwink climbed to the shoulders of his giant and leapt over to the other. But he was out of time. Oates drew every bit of air into his lungs.
Issa!
Fetching jerked, and he saw the flash of an eye between the calcifying fingers. Arms swinging up in unison, the chief slammed her fists into the giant's. The stone fingers fractured, fell away. Fetch hammered her elbows into the last of her prison and fell free in a cloud of dust. She rose from the rubble and staggered to Oates, eyes glassy.
Barsius,
she said, voice creaking.
He's A fucking corpse, Oates told her. But fetch.
They returned to Jackal together, crouching on either side. Fetch frowned, her searching stare and hands growing frantic as they moved over him.
He's not healing, she said.
Oates swallowed. He couldn't look at her. Couldn't look at him. I know. I don't think he... Fetch. It was me.
You?
His words were cut off by a wet, tearing sound. He and Fetch looked to find Hoodwink squatting over Barsius's headless corpse, cutting its heart out. The pale mongrel stood, his arm crimson to the elbow. He held the shiny organ over Jackal and squeezed. Blood ran in thick rivulets into the wound. Hood wrung every drop and tossed the heart aside. He drew a knife and cut his own forearm the next instant, clenching and unclenching his fist to coax more spilled blood into Jackal.
The hell's Hood? Fetching hissed.
Atukan, Huroga, and Karatan fought and bled for Bellico, Hoodwink replied. Their spirits may draw strength from one another, as they did in life.
The blood pooled in the cleft running the length of Jackal's torso. Oates held his breath, and nearly pissed himself when Jackal began to thrash. He and Fetch wrangled his convulsing limbs until the worst had passed. When the fits died, Jackal's breathing was shallow. But he was fucking breathing. Oates cocked an eye at Hoodwink.
You know he was like Jackal? He asked Fetching.
Later,
was her only reply. Jackal's wound was just beginning to knit when his eyes finally opened. They rolled, drunken and sightless, for some time before settling on Fetch. His voice was a rasp.
You're safe.
Yes,
Fetching said, rubbing his face.
Did I fucking die?
Jackal's tenuous focus moved to Oates.
You fucking kill me?
Nope.
Jackal's grin was weak and wonderful.
Liar.
Chapter 24. Smoke from the grave pits filled the sky over Kalbarka. Warbler's prisoners had done the digging. Nearly 300 men had thrown down their arms when he took the garden palace, and soon found their hands filled with shovels. But 300 men couldn't dig a hole large enough for the slain. The centaurs alone would take weeks to properly bury, so Warbler had ordered the pits dug just deep enough to contain the Alunan fire. The captured frails were put to work, dragging bodies to the blistering edges of the pits, feeding the alchemical flames with stacks of dead. Shed Snake was not among them. Culprit had wanted him buried on Badiat Hill, next to Mead, on bastard soil. But the journey was too long, the season too warm. The body would never make it. So the true bastards bore him away from the city, carried on a sled roped to Culprit's hog. They couldn't go far, couldn't be away long, but Fetch told the young mongrel he could choose the place. Culprit rode southeast, the direction of their lot. It felt good to get away from Kalbarka, from the walls and corpse smoke. It was a shit errand, burying a brother, but Oates was grateful for the excuse to put the city in the dust of Ugg's hooves. 2 days since the garrison surrendered, 2 days since he and Jackal and Hood and the chief had climbed out of the tunnels, 2 days that passed as long and taxing as 2 years. With the city in mongrel hands, Jacintha was able to convince a sizable portion of the hillmen to return. Fetch needed them to serve as the new garrison, but they turned their focus away from the walls in favor of looting on the first night. Jacintha forewarned the chief of the ransacking. It was the price of the bandits' aid. They'd bled buckets for the chance. To deny them would only spell more blood. With no choice, Fetch allowed it, ordering the hoof riders to quell any violence against Kalbarka's small population of innocents. It was a queer duty, riding patrol around a conquered city, little more than an ancient ruin even before the attack, and watching over men as they picked its bones. The sight of half-orcs sitting their hogs close by was enough to deter the worst of the hillmen's impulses,
But Kalbarka was vast, and there was no denying foul deeds were performed in neglected corners. Several patrols reported having to prevent the bandits from setting fires. Thresher beat down a trio of bandits abusing an old man, and Sluggard feathered another through the leg for trying to make off with a woman's girl child. There were stories that cut the other way, of mongrels lending themselves to the pillaging rather than keeping it controlled. Anvil killed a pair of nomads, but refused to say what evil they were committing. Fetch didn't press it. Harrowing as the night was, the morning delivered the greatest injustice. Dawn saw many of the men return to the Smelteds, carrying their disappointment with the lack of spoils with them, throwing curses at the fucking Sootskins for keeping the best for themselves. Those who remained were little better than squatters. Fetch couldn't trust them to so much as guard the prisoners. That duty fell to the White Wrists, but the former galley slaves could not resist the chance for vengeance against the frails who'd put them in chains. By the time word reached the chief, more than a dozen men had been tortured to death. The other hoofs were hardly more reliable. Pulp Ear and the Cauldron Brotherhood were chafing to return to their own fortress. It was all Fetch could do to keep them rooted. The Tusked Tide was content to linger, but only because they hadn't yet voted a new chief. Borlip had climbed onto his hog's back and slit his wrists, rather than die slow and screaming from a festering gut wound. Beloved by his riders, his loss had left them flat-footed. Rednail was the most likely to be the next hoofmaster, but he too had been injured in the battle with the horse cocks, miring the vote with uncertainty and indecision. With few left the chief could trust, it fell to the bastards to ensure her commands were met. They ran messages, stood watches, rode patrols, an endless rotation of duties to keep Kalbarka from slipping away from Fetch's control. Sleep was snatched, so brief it was more cruelty than comfort. Food was something to be tallied, not consumed. Oates wished Grocer were still alive. The old coin clipper would have thrived in the unending toil and privation. But the bastards made do without him, as they made do without Shedsnake and Mead and Dumdor, and all the others gone to the dust. They had always been few, but never so diminished. Polecat had come out of his stupor, but he remained listless and was off-taken with sudden bouts of confusion. Fetch kept him close, managing the city from the front of the garrison storehouse so that their supplies were always well protected. Warbler took permanent post at the main gatehouse. Anvil had command of the north gate, Thune with her as ever. Warbler had been right about needing the Cyclops in the final assault. The garden palace had been well defended for the Frail's last stand. The greatest of their wizards, the one the White Wrists called the Starving Man, stood in support of the men behind the barricades, but Thune proved immune to his sorcery and crushed the wizard beneath his cannon club. Their arcane champion's death broke the back of the defenders, and it wasn't long before their spears and halberds, swords and stock bows were cast down, even as their voices rose in pleas for mercy. Warbler had struggled to give it. Many an unarmed frail was cut down before he quelled the fury of the mongrels. Even now, Pulpier pressured the chief to execute the prisoners the moment they were done burying the dead. Fetch hadn't made her decision, but the whispers of speculation had sped through the city. Standing guard at the burial pits, Oates had seen several men weeping as they dragged bodies to the fire, fearing they would soon follow. The White Wrists would murder them all without question. Perhaps Pulpier would, too. Oates reckoned Warbler could, if he thought it prudent. But Fetching? Oates wasn't certain. There'd been no time for her to speak anything but orders since coming out of the tunnels. They'd emerged to find the city captured, but not yet docile. Pockets of resistance went to ground all over, men who didn't fall back to the Garden Palace, and were too determined or too scared to give up the fight. Jackal might have tackled the holdouts alone, but he could barely stand after the ordeal in the Lionclad's temple. It was Sluggard who offered the notion that the men could be talked into surrender. The chief agreed, and Slug did not rest until he convinced every last stubborn soldier to lay down arms. In the meantime, Fetch sent Oates off in search of Blood Crow. By mid-morning, he'd found the elf outside the walls, downriver. Ruin lay in a great heap upon the bank, still alive, but only just. Too huge to drape over the back of hog or stag, they'd had to drag the Uhul with ropes back to Kalbarka, a chore that required Oates to first return to the city for more hogs. Fetch had her twin placed in the storehouse, where she could be near if he woke. So far, he'd given no sign that he would. The last 2 days had required the bastards to dredge every grain of grit they possessed just to keep chaos at bay. And now they risked it all, leaving the city as a hoof to bid farewell to one of their own. A few leagues from the walls, Culprit reined up beneath a stand of carob trees. "Here," he said, dismounting. Warbler and Anvil took up picks and broke the first rocky layer of dirt. Oates wanted to help, but his hands were too thickly bandaged. The burns from the cauldrons were worse than he'd realized, and what was left of his mace-bashed fingers had to be cut away, leaving him a pair of nubs in the center of his left hand. Thresher and Culprit deepened the work with shovels. They dug in pairs until all had taken a turn at the labor. Even Oates, though his contribution was paltry, spelling one another not because it took more than one mongrel to dig a grave, but because the true bastards buried their fallen as a hoof. They hadn't slept, hadn't eaten proper, had found no respite in days. They were heartsick and tired to the edge of collapse, but they shifted earth and stone without pause, all sweating, some bleeding from wounds not yet closed. Shed Snake's shriven body lay upon its sled, waiting for the completion of the last act his brethren would ever do for him. They'd be damned if they weren't going to do it right. Too soon, it was done. They did nothing but stand for a long while, letting the miserly wind of Ulwandula stir the paltry branches above the grave. Culprit took a stuttering breath. His mouth opened, only to pinch shut the next instant. The young mongrel's half-shaved head drooped, then gave a small, anguished shake. Oates could see the flesh quivering around his lips. Again he tried to speak, and again was thwarted. There were no words in him, only the sobs he struggled to master. Unwilling to let them loose, he looked to Fetching, shame settling in the recesses of his clenched face. She stepped to him, placed a hand upon his shoulder. Whatever words she was about to utter were cut off by Culprit's sudden, hard embrace. It shocked her, shocked Oates, the swift, nearly violent familiarity. But Fetch's reflexes allowed no pause. Her arms snapped to encircle her crumbling rider, held him firmly together. "You loved him," she said, her words just strong enough to reach Culprit through his sharp breaths. "We all loved him." They clung tight to each other for a span, and Oates could see in Fetch's face the gift Culprit had given her by allowing her to be not a chief, but a simple rider once more. She waited until he was ready to relinquish the hold. Sniffing, Culprit climbed into the grave, and Sluggard handed down Shed Snake's saddle. Jackal and Warbler lashed Snake to a board, leaving a pair of lengths at the head and foot. Oates offered a hand to help Culprit out of the hole. "Would you help lower him down, Oates?" the young mongrel asked. Oates nodded. Culprit went to Polecat next. The stare in his hatchet face was leagues away. "Cat? Cat?" Polecat blinked hard. He seemed puzzled by Culprit's presence. "I think Snake would have enjoyed making you work," the young mongrel said, forcing a smile. Polecat's eyes flicked from Culprit to the grave and back. His perplexed expression deepened before finally breaking. He molded his old self together. "Sure." "Chief," Culprit said, "would you?" "Of course." The four of them took up the ropes and carried Snake to his grave. Steadily, they lowered him into the ground. Oates felt the coarse burn of the rope through the linen shrouding his fingers and used the pain to keep his tears at bay. Shed Snake settled onto the flush bed of churned dirt, his saddle above his head. The bastards filled the grave as they dug it, each giving effort. And he was gone. Thresher retrieved a water skin from her tack and passed it around while Oates secured the tools to the sled. When he returned, the hoofs still surrounded the grave, some closer than others. Warbler, ever willing to be the voice of hard truths, was first to break the silence.
Time we were back.
All eyes went to the chief, but her stare was fixed on the fresh mound at her feet.
We're not going back, she said. Not all of us.
The quiet born from sorrow grew taut at the chief's words.
There's something you all need to hear, Fetch went on.
She looked up.
This is my fault. We're burying a brother and countless others because of me.
Because of Zirko, Jackal insisted. Fetch shook her head.
He may have set the trap, but I led us into it. I'm the one who made him our foe when he refused to be the ally I demanded. You couldn't have known he'd go this far, Chief, Thresher said. No, Fetch said, angry at herself. But I knew in my gut there was a chance his call for help was hog shit. I took precautions, sent Hood down into the tunnels before the attack to look for signs of truth to Zirko's claims that the halflings were being hunted. He hadn't come back when Barcia said I was needed to take the gate. I knew not to trust him, but I put too much trust in myself. I wagered if there was a danger, I'd be the only one to face it. And whatever it was, I could defeat it. I was wrong. Never figured on the fucking betrayer.
She made a disgusted noise.
Well fucking named.
Chief, Oates said. What caution you took saved your life. Jack and I would never have found you were it not for Hood. As to the rest, you said later. I've held my tongue these last days, but reckon now is good?
The bastards followed his expectant gaze to Hoodwink, standing at the fringe of their ring. He'd removed his namesake for the digging despite the scant shade of the carob trees, leaving his milky, scarred pate and lifeless eyes exposed. He met the chief's stare and gave her the smallest, permissive nod. Fetch loosed a hard breath.
If ever there were words you needed to speak, Hood, it's these.
In all the years Oates had been around Hoodwink, he'd never known him to display emotion. And he didn't now. Yet Oates saw, for the first time, Hood suppress them. A tiny swallow, a mere tremor at the jawline, the briefest flash born and snuffed in those black eyes. On any other face, such signs would have been insignificant, imperceptible. But upon Hood's death mask, they shone harsher than the sun.
I bear a relic.
More silence. No one moved. Perhaps, like Oates, the others were repeating Hood's thin, unfeeling words in their heads, trying to reconcile them.
I'm lost, Sluggard said at last.
He's like Jack,
Oates told the hoof, moved by a mixture of impatience and a desire to help Hoodwink with the uncomfortable task of speaking.
Got some piece of an old Unyar warrior in him. Allows him to fucking blend in with shit.
Explains a heap, Thresher said.
What'd you get? Sluggard asked Hood. An arm bone like Jackal? Or like a rib?
The hells does that matter, Thresh said.
Sluggard shrugged.
Curious is all.
Flesh.
Hood's word brought all their attentions back to him.
Karatan was found mummified. His flesh replaced mine.
Sluggard went wan.
All of it?
Hoodwink nodded.
Explains a heap more, Thresher said.
You know this? Jackal asked Warbler.
The frowning old Thrice shook his head. Jack squinted at Hoodwink.
You weren't called to defend Strava the night I was. What bargain did you strike with Zirko?
Va'aris Karatan was not given to me by Zirko.
Then who?
The Black Womb.
You mean crafty, Oates said.
He gave it to you when you took Zhrika to him.
No. It was joined to me as a boy.
A boy? Jackal said, confounded.
Keep your head, Jack, Fetching warned without looking at him. I mean it.
You mean he's Black Womb?
Oates could feel his friend's fury building, so strong it nearly stunk. They'd all put their swords aside for the digging, left their thrums hung on saddle horns and tree limbs. But a good rider always had a knife stowed. Hood would have several. Not that he or Jackal needed a blade to be lethal.
Go on.
Warbler's deep voice smothered the tension. His craggy face showed no compassion, no understanding, only a grim desire to hear the rest. Warbler had ridden with Hood when they were both free riders, when one was ousted from the Gray Bastards and the other hadn't yet joined. If there was a mongrel in the hoof who could claim to know Hoodwink, it was Warbler. A claim he could not now make in earnest.
They trained me, Hood said. Granted me the relic. Sent me here with the task to learn the lots.
So you joined the hoofs, Jackal said, teeth clenched.
Those I could.
Hood's body bore the scar-eclipsed ink of the Skull Sowers, Cauldron Brotherhood, Shards, Suns, and Tust Tide. Not being a thrice-blood had kept him from the orc stains, and the fangs of our fathers didn't exile their fallen brothers, they killed them. Something Hood likely discovered during his stints as a nomad. Oates reckoned the Rudders had been destroyed before Hood got around to joining them, though he'd have been hard-pressed to fit among that notoriously lusty bunch. That left the Gray Bastards, the only tattoos he possessed not yet crisscrossed with old cuts.
Not yet.
Why us? Oates asked. Got yourself tossed from the rest. Why stick with us?
Hood didn't answer. Oates couldn't tell if it was hesitance or unwillingness that kept his lips shut. Jackal provided the bitter answer.
It was the Claymaster, the last living bearer of Hisparth's plague, the key to Crafty's grab for the throne. Crafty, who knew so much about us before he arrived, because you were his fucking spy.
No.
And you still are.
No.
Small wonder you refrain from speaking, Hood. Your forked tongue is showing.
I have no allegiance to the sorcerer. I came here years before him. The first I saw him was at the kiln, the same night as you. Yet I knew his masters were those that trained me. I reasoned what I had learned of the lots had been passed to him. He knew me for what I was, but he never sought my help, and I did not offer it.
Jackal made a disgusted noise.
Why?
Thresher peered hard at Hoodwink.
If you were both Black Womb, why wouldn't you conspire?
I could not be trusted, Hood replied.
He trusted you enough at Mongrel's Cradle, Oates said, his anger a few steps behind Jackal's. Looked to me that you and Crafty were all manner of conspiring. Zirko said he's been trying to keep Bellico's relics from the Black Womb. What happened, Hood? The chief sent you off with Zhrika, to protect her, to help her. Did you run immediately to Crafty with her and the tongue? Is that what you did, you blanched fucking cutthroat?
He didn't charge, much as he wanted to. He was too damn tired. Yelling nearly caused him to collapse. But he wished for all the hells he had the strength to get his hands on that pale, lying throat. He could strangle a treacherous cunt, even with only 8 fingers.
I brought her to him because she asked me to.
Oates found he had the strength after all. He surged toward Hood, but Fetch stepped between them.
Oates!
She halted him with a hand on his chest.
Just listen.
Her other hand pointed over his shoulder.
Jack?
Oates had his back to Jackal, but he'd felt him move in support of his stillborn rush. He took a breath. Fetch removed her hand, but did not step aside. Still, Hoodwink hesitated. It wasn't fear of Oates or even Jackal. It was discomfort. Whatever he was about to say,
the chief had already heard. For a mongrel who rarely spoke, repeating himself must have been a small hell.
"Jrika is insightful,"
Hood began, his words measured to the edge of stilted.
"She speaks always, but it is not prattle. She fights with what she says. It was not a duel I could win. She bested my silence. And I told her about myself."
Hood still seemed perplexed by the admission.
"She listened."
Oates glanced down to find Fetch giving him a meaningful look. He found himself relaxing, nodding.
"She does that."
Hood took no notice of the empathy.
"Later, she asked if I would contact the Black Womb. She knew of them from her travels. She wanted to be free of Bellico's tongue, and she saw in them a chance to be rid of it. She insisted that my refusal would not be an offense. She said no matter my answer, we would remain friends."
The last word was a marvel made from sound, both to hear and for Hood to say.
"I sent word to the Black Womb, though I had not done so in years. They sent Crafty."
"Your old friend," Jackal spat. Hood's eyes shifted.
"Was he? I seem to recall he was yours."
Polecat snorted. "He has you there, Jackal boy." Perhaps it was the bald truth that subdued Jackal, or perhaps it was simply the return of Cat's familiar, lecherous sneer. Whatever it was, Jackal did not rile. Warbler stepped right up to Hoodwink. The old thrice's sun-squinted eyes moved over the austere mongrel's features, sharp enough that Oates wouldn't have been shocked to see Hoodwink's flesh peel away.
"I knew you kept secrets," Warbler said. "What nomad doesn't? But I never smelled a lie on you. And you did all I ever asked of you. Perhaps I'm fooling myself with the belief that I'll see any falsehood, but I'm going to ask you plain. That wizard ran roughshod over the gray bastards with his schemes. Jackal weren't the only one he cozened. Claymaster fell into his web, Fetching too, despite seeing him for what he was. Yet you claim you didn't help him. Why?"
"I could not be trusted," Hood said for the second time.
"Think we grasp that part," Sluggard said with a wry smile.
"You don't understand," Fetching said.
"No, I don't," Jackal replied.
"It's because he was a bastard."
All turned to culprit, now squatted by Shed Snake's grave, one hand resting on the mound of dirt.
"He was a bastard," the young mongrel said again. "Maybe not quite gray and not yet true, but he was us, not them."
"He's not us," Jackal said. "He's
a powerful mongrel with queer abilities that just showed up and joined the hoof?"
Culprit asked, cutting Jackal off with his words and a sharp stare. "I was no stranger, Culprit. I was blooded and sworn, and you knew me before I left." Culprit shrugged.
"I knew how you liked hearth brushed, that you rarely took ale during table meets, but often an entire skin of wine after. I knew you the way a slop knows a rider, which ain't much."
"That's the way it was," Jackal said. "Same when I was a slophead."
"Same," Culprit mused. "Reckon that's so. I was raised by Beryl too, you know. Yes, we came up the same. Orphans, slops, bastards.